Blog Talk Radio.
Fellow workers, fellow soldiers in the cause, this is a strange Christmas Eve. Almost the whole world is locked in deadly struggle. Armed with the most terrible weapons which science can devise, the nations advance upon each other. Ill would it be for us this Christmas tide if we were not sure that no greed for the lands or wealth of any other people, no vulgar ambition, no morbid lust for material gain at the expense of others had led us to the field. Ill would it be for us if that were so. Here in the midst of war, raging and roaring over all the lands and seas, creeping nearer to our hearths and homes, here amid all these tumults, we have tonight the peace of the spirit in each cottage home and in every generous heart. Therefore, we may cast aside, for this night at least, the cares and dangers which beset us, and make for the children an evening of happiness in a world of storm. Here then, for one night only, each home throughout the English-speaking world should be a brightly lighted island of happiness and peace. Let the children have their night of fun and laughter. Let the gifts of Father Christmas delight their play. Let us, grown-ups, share to the full in their unstinted pleasures. Before we turn again to the stern tasks and formidable year that lie before us, resolved that by our sacrifice and daring, these same children shall not be robbed of their inheritance or denied their right to live in a free and decent world. And so, in God's mercy, a happy Christmas to you all.
Thank you.
good evening and good afternoon and welcome to the English Defence League radio show broadcasting live on blogtalkradio.com. The English Defence League radio show, the truth and the voice of the EDL. Tonight's radio show is a special show tonight. It's EDL radio show, the year of the Patriots is the banner, with a special guest, Mr. Carmel Melamed. Mr. Melamed is a journalist, and we'll be talking a little bit more. This gentleman will be joining us about 9 o'clock our time. So, anyway, let me continue with the script. Welcome to the English Defence League radio show with your host, Jeff Holiday Mitchell, and my wingman for this evening is my helper. Dave, VK Milner. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we welcome a special guest, journalist Carmel Melamed. Mr. Melamed will bring his special knowledge of the Islamic Iranian regime as we span the planet in a look at 2019, the year of the Patriots. From Europe to South America to Asia and points in between, we've witnessed the rise of tormented mankind demanding to be free. The EDL has been at the spearhead in this struggle for human rights for the past decade, and we celebrate our brave brothers and sisters from across the globe. No surrender ever. We also go on to say we wish our American friends a happy Thanksgiving Day on the 28th of November. We will have a special encore episode for you at our regular time on that day. All that is necessary for evil to prevail is that good men do nothing. That was by the late great Edmund Burke. Those who make peaceful revolution impossible will make violent revolution inevitable. And that was by the late great President John F. Kennedy. And without further ado, let me bring in my wingman and my friend and my colleague, Dave VK Milner. Good evening, good afternoon, Dave.
Good evening to you, Jeff. Good afternoon to everybody in the States. Hello to everybody across the planet and, of course, off Earth. Now, some of you may be wondering why we began the episode with Winston Churchill wishing everyone a happy Christmas, and here's the explanation. This show repeats at the Unpleasant Blind Guy page on Spreaker.com, and that, of course, runs through SHR Media, and it just so happens we're a little bit ahead with the schedule, so the first part of this episode that you're hearing right now live on blogtalkradio.com will be heard on Christmas Day at the Unpleasant Blind Guy page at Spreaker.com. So, if you guys are listening on Christmas Day, I know that Jeff wishes, and I also wish you a very Merry Christmas, full of peace, joy, and love. And we're going to go on now to do what I think is kind of a celebratory show. Jeff has been the inspiration for this all year long. We began 2019 having already experienced a month of the Yellow Vest protests. The anniversary of that is going to be happening again on the 1st of December. And Jeff observed that this is the year of the Patriots. With Patriot movements and people protesting tyranny all across the world. And it's continued all through this year. And this is kind of a show, a little bit of a tip of a hat and congratulations to Jeff, who saw it coming. Of course, a lot of us did as well. But we want to celebrate those people who have put feet on the street and who have put their lives and their treasure and their sacred honor at risk and who are standing up to that tyranny. Jeff, what do you think about what has happened just over this past year,
well,
brother?
Well, to be honest with you, Dave, I could see the way that it was going to pan out in 2019. I just knew that was the way it was going to go. I mean, we've been feeling that the heat of the globalists and the elitists, they are really running around with their hair a lot. They really are, you know, like the tune that we play, Land of Confusion. They really trying to get to grips of things, and it's all falling around them. It's like clutching at straws, and the straws just keep falling away. That's what we're seeing with the globalists and the elitists out there. Yes, it is crumbling. The domino effect is taking shape. And once we leave the EU, there will be a gnashing and a clashing of teeth when we go, because that will be the sinking of the Titanic. That will be like going down. That will be the great EU ship to be sinking. And thank goodness, unfortunately, not unlike the Titanic, there was really, really good people on board and good people. On this EU ship that will go down, there's nothing but pure and utter evil. So good riddance to bad rubbish. That's what I say. There you go, Dave. That's just surmising how I'm standing at the play now in the game of cricket. I'm watching the play as it's unfolded, Dave.
Yeah, I know, Jeff, and so have we all in this past year. And it hasn't been without a certain amount of pushback. We discussed this a little bit before the show. The state-sponsored terrorism against its own people, which we also saw in 2019 with the attack on Tommy Robinson's campaign, actually the attacks, more than one, but certainly the one sponsored by the state, which occurred when he was on a campaign stop running for MEP. We saw that in the United States. We've seen Portland and Seattle and places like that, places like Berkeley, California, where police have been told to stand down and basically let Antifa take over. This uprising of people trying to throw off the shackles of the New World Order has not come without a certain amount of pushback. There's been a lot of it. And to that end, Jeff, I want to start with our first story. Now, this here takes place in Bolivia. This is going to be our first stop. We're going to go a lot of places, people. And as you guys know, there was recently a coup there to oust the socialist leader who is now living in luxury in Mexico. Okay, so there were consequences and has been pushback to this, but the people are still standing firm. And I have something here from Breitbart that was put out on the 20th that I think will shed a lot of light on what is going on in Bolivia. Are you ready for this, Jeff? This will be six minutes and 19 seconds. All right. Here you go, guys. You are listening to a special edition of the English Defense League radio show. Here we go.
Don't let food into the cities. Evo Morales caught on tape planning starvation in Bolivia. By Francis Martel on November 20, 2019. The conservative government of Bolivia published an audio file on Wednesday, allegedly of a conversation between a socialist activist and former President Evo Morales, in which the latter ordered him to ensure that socialist rioters prevented food and basic goods from getting to the nation's cities. Morales resigned from the presidency 2 weeks ago, after 13 years in power, following the revelation of widespread fraud in the October elections he claimed had earned him another five-year term. He then fled to Mexico and claimed to be the victim of a coup, although he voluntarily resigned, and is now demanding that the government reject his resignation and reinstate him. Dozens of members of his party, the Movement Towards Socialism, MAS, also resigned and fled the country with him, leaving the conservative deputy president of the Senate, Janine Inez, the highest-ranking person in the line of succession in the country. Inés is now interim president and attempting to reinstate order after more than a decade of socialist rule. MAS supporters have reacted to Inés's appointment with violence, rioting and looting businesses and in some areas attempting to destroy key infrastructure sites. 6 people died on Tuesday after a mob tried to blow up a plant owned by the nation's Federal Oil Corporation, Yacimientos Petrolíferos Fiscales Bolivianos, YPFB. The military subdued the attack but said that no soldier fired a single shot, the deaths were all self-inflicted. On Wednesday, Minister of Government, Interior Minister Arturo Murillo published audio of what he said was a call between Morales, currently in Mexico, and Faustino Ucrillaroy, a rural socialist community organizer, in which Morales demanded Ucra organize blockades around the nation's biggest cities to prevent food and basic supplies from coming in, pressuring the government to allow Morales to return to power. Ucra is a member of one of Bolivia's coca growers' unions. Coca is the plant used to develop cocaine. Morales rose to power as an advocate for coca growers and used his international prominence to promote the legalization of coca leaf. Ucra, who refers repeatedly to Morales as brother, tells Morales that the coca leaders have organized 2 blockade points to prevent goods from entering, one that has attracted 4,500 people. "You know what, brother, you don't have to have 4,500 people," Morales replies in the audio. "Divide the union into 4 or 5 groups, so it lasts longer. If you concentrate in one place, people give up. But if there are groups, they take turns, we can hold up the blockade." Murillo told reporters the call occurred 3 days ago but could not reveal how Bolivian intelligence services acquired it. He accused Morales of terrorism and crimes against humanity for helping Ucra organize violent blockades that could starve out thousands of poor Bolivians. "It is not possible for Evo to continue pitting Bolivians against Bolivians. To order food not to enter, it is a crime against humanity," Murillo stated, according to the Bolivian newspaper El Deber. On Tuesday, members of Bolivia's conservative organizations sent a letter to the socialist president of Mexico, Andrés Manuel López Obrador, urging Mexico not to protect Morales in light of the organized violence committed by his supporters. The letter notably precedes Murillo's proof that Morales not only approves of the violence, but is orchestrating it. The letter accuses López Obrador, in hot water in his own country for being too lenient on violent cartels, of promoting drug trafficking that has hurt our people. Morales has for years faced accusations of being involved in cocaine trafficking, stemming not only from his public support for legalizing coca, but his ties to the Nicolás Maduro regime in Venezuela, which runs its own cocaine trafficking operation out of the military. "It hurts us to see how a person who did so much harm, who promotes hate, violence, and constantly claims to speak in the representation of the poorest people, is receiving a juicy subsidy from the Mexican people and lives with extraordinary luxuries," the letter read. "We doubt that Mexicans agree with charging these expenses to the public dole, and I know we Bolivians feel this is offensive because we here are waiting for him to soon face justice here." López Obrador ensured that, upon receiving political asylum in Mexico, the government would take care of Morales' living expenses. In Bolivia, Inés's government has faced 2 weeks of violent attacks in La Paz, the executive capital, neighboring socialist stronghold El Alto, and the Cochabamba region where Morales is from. Rioters stormed La Paz chanting, "Here we go, civil war." Last year, and police have since arrested dozens, including Cuban, Venezuelan, and other communist regime agents, for enabling, paying for, or otherwise participating in violence. In one particularly alarming arrest, police identified a man hoarding explosives as Facundo Malera Schoenfeld, an Argentine Marxist terrorist member of the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, FARC. Authorities have also identified several death threats aimed at Inés, Bolivia's second woman president in history. Military officials who responded to the attack said 6 individuals died and another 30 were injured in the riot. At least 3 of the dead were shot, but no soldier fired on the protesters, meaning they were victims of friendly fire. In a press statement, the Bolivian military said the mob possessed high-powered explosives, which they used to try to break into the oil facility. They successfully burned several corporate vehicles at the facility. In a video published by the newspaper Página Siete and allegedly taken by one of the rioters, the mob can be seen placing explosives around the perimeter of the facility. Shots being fired can be heard but not seen. "Now we are really going to civil war," the narrator shouts. Follow Francis Martel on Facebook and Twitter.
Welcome back to the English Defense League Radio Show with your host, Jeff Spider Mitchell, on this very special day. Jeff, what do you think, man?
It's the same old, isn't it? It just carries on and on, doesn't it? Civil war, all sorts of dodgy things going on. In Bolivia, has it ever changed? I think it's always been roughly like that, and it does, hasn't it? It's crazy, man. It's like the Wild Wild West.
Well, it is, Jeff, you know, but what strikes me in the context of today's show is that this is what happens. It's never an easy road when people rise up against the tyrants, because they maintain themselves, the tyrants do, by buying people off who have no problem with violence or anything like that, or have no problem with starving out their fellow countrymen. I mean, that was the headline for this story. Well, yeah, keep the food out of the cities. I mean, then this from a guy, from Morales, who, as the article said, like any other lefty, always claims to speak for the poorest people and everything like that. But when it comes down to it, when it comes down to him losing his power, when it comes down to him losing his influence, he's ready to starve people out in order to get back in power. And in the meantime, Jeff, he's living in Mexico in luxury, I'm sure. And what a lot of people don't understand about Mexico is that a good number of the Mexican people live in shacks with dirt floors. And yet this sleazeball from another country being guested by the president of Mexico and the Mexican government is living the life, you know. He's living the life of Riley on the backs of the poor people of Mexico. So once again, you see a lefty who is taking advantage of all of that. And the whole time planning to get back into power by sponsoring attacks, businesses being attacked and blown up, burned and things of that nature, and starving people out. And this is just, Jeff, I have to say, man, this just makes me more and more respectful of the people who stand up against that kind of tyranny, because it's not easy. It's never easy. It's more than just being called a bad name on Twitter. Yeah, brother. It's more than just being called a bad name on Twitter.
The freedom has never been easy. There's always been the blood-stained floors to show that is the case. Freedom, democracy, it has to be hard fought. And as I say, bloodshed and sacrifice is what has to be paid. It's sad to say that, but that is what democracy and freedom is all about, and liberty. It's what you had to hard fight for. And once again, where we see different parts of the world in that position, and it never... 1 year it might be a little bit different from another, but it just goes on in the same never-ending circle of whatever you want to call it. It just goes on. We'd like to see a total finish to what's going on, and people, their lives being sacrificed, fighting for what's right, fighting for their children, fighting for the rights of the people. But as you say, Dave, it's a very high toll that people have had to fall. I mean, you've only got to look at two World Wars, people sacrificing life for freedom and that. It's what people do. If you love freedom and you love democracy, you're going to fight to defend it, aren't you, whatever the cost. And we've seen that, haven't we? We've seen millions and millions of people, soldiers and just normal people, die for it. But Yeah, Dave, it's always a never-ending story, but we'd like to, you know, we'd like to see some goodness come out of what people, the sacrifice of the people. Because it does, sometimes it's got to take sacrifice before when you've actually achieved what you wanted. There's someone that once said you can never just say, oh, it's all over now. No, it's not. You're always going to be watching behind you because of I can't remember. It was someone very famous who said it. It might be one of your presidents that even said it, or maybe one of my prime ministers has said it. But it's something that we must hold dear with when we get our freedom and things like that our ancestors fought for. We must hold it firmly, but never, don't just get complacent with what you have, because it can be taken away so quickly, what we've seen in the UK now. We're seeing that. Dave, yeah, I've gone on a little bit of a tangent, like I normally do.
Well, yes.
But I had to say some things there.
Well, of course, You know, this is your show. You're the captain of the ship. And I was just, you know, you brought up the UK, of course. And the people in the UK who are standing up against the tyrannical government there are suffering as well. I mean, we never fail to mention Melanie Shaw, who is in prison right now in just terrible conditions. And several people from the EDL who have been put in prison, not to mention those that have been assaulted, hurt badly, and things of that nature. People who have been rousted out of their homes at the wee hours of the morning just to go down to the police station and have a conversation about nothing. People who have had their computers and phones taken away because of the government's distaste for the truth and things of that nature. I mean, it all comes home, Jeff, and it takes a special kind of person with the grace of God to stand up for the right when things like this occur. Am I right, brother?
It's called oppression, and I think that a lot of us are suffering. We're seeing people like Tommy Robinson are suffering oppression. With standing up and doing the right thing and speaking out about what's going on, you're oppressed, you're suppressed, whatever you want to call it, and you're victimized, you're persecuted by the state persecution. And when you go to court and you look at the judge, and you know that judge is going to find you guilty, simply because he's told to. It's so corrupt, and that's the problem, you know. But you've got to fight it no matter what. Even though you know that the odds are against you, you still got to fight against oppression. There's no two ways about it, is it, Dave?
No, they're not, Jeff. And I think we may have our guests on board. Let me just check this call here real quick, Jeff. Just one moment, all right? Caller, you have reached the English Defense League radio show with your host, Jeff Spider Mitchell. Please identify yourself.
Hi, this is Carmel Melamed.
Welcome, Carmel.
Good evening. Welcome to the show, Carmel, Mr. Melamed. It's a great honor and a privilege to have you join us on the show this evening. I hope you're keeping well, my friend.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Go ahead,
Carmel,
Dave.
I hope you don't mind if I continue to call you Carmel. People, I know Carmel Melamed from the Turban, which was a chat room put out through a great radio show, which right now, for a moment, no longer exists. The Land Chasers with Lonnie Poindexter I came to know Mr. Melamed as a man of great and deep knowledge. It didn't take very long for that to be apparent. And as I was thinking about this program and thinking about putting it together, obviously one of the things that we wanted to cover was the freedom movement that's going on right now in Iran. And this fellow that you're about to hear from has very intimate knowledge about that. Carmel, would you please give the people a little bit of a thumbnail of your background, sir, so that we can start from there?
Oh, absolutely. I was born in Iran 41 years ago, at the cusp of the revolution. So at the beginning of chaos that resulted in the Ayatollah Khomeini coming to power occurred around the time when I was born. Subsequently, a couple of years later, the new Ayatollah regime, a radical Shiite Islamic regime, took power, basically did away with any kind of freedoms that the previous Shah's regime had put in place for all Iranians. Our family were Jews. We were non-Muslims, and under the new Sharia law of the Islamic regime, we were relegated to third-class citizenship. My family did not want to leave Iran. Iran was our home. Jews had been living in Iran for 2,700 years. They had no affiliation with the previous regime. They were not political. And so they remained, you know, a year after the revolution under the Ayatollah. Unfortunately, one of my father's relatives was arrested and executed for the crime of being a wealthy Jew who owned a hotel. He had one of the largest, most successful hotels in the heart of Tehran, and the regime wanted to confiscate it. And they arrested him, they promptly put him in front of a firing squad, and they executed him. And that execution was traumatic for our family. My father, out of love for, you know, his relative, who was also a close friend, went to retrieve the body, and it was an entire ordeal. But they were able to get the body. They gave this young gentleman, who was about 30 or 31 years old, a final burial, and less than a week or two after, my parents, myself, you know, obviously I was very young. I have no memory of this, but we fled Iran. We left behind everything, all of our assets, our money, our properties, everything was left behind. And this was right at the cusp of the war between Iran and Iraq. Like many other thousands of, you know, Jews, Christians, and even Muslims who didn't agree with the regime, we fled. And so we set up, you know, our family set up new lives again here in the United States, Southern California. You have a pretty substantial Iranian expat community living here in Southern California. And that was 39 years ago, in September of 1980. And in the last 20 years, I've been involved with reporting on the Iranian community here in Southern California, and then also reporting on some of the activities of the regime vis-a-vis, you know, journalists, religious minorities, Christians, Jews, Zoroastrians, artists, just trying to educate Westerners and Americans about the evil totalitarian aspects of this regime. They are truly a threat not only to that part of the world, the Middle East, but they are a threat to decency and, you know, Western civilization, in my humble opinion. I also speak at, you know, various venues about, you know, what this regime is about, and just trying to wake people up to the nightmare that they have unleashed upon their own people, upon much of the Middle East, and their aspirations for Europe and America and the rest of the world. It is not a regime that, you know, like North Korea, that just wants to be left alone and have its own domain. No, they have Shiite radical Islamic aspirations for the entire world. It's a quote-unquote Islamic revolution that they aspire to.
What an amazing story, Carmel. I mean, you know what you said about one of your relatives. I feel so sorry for your poor family to have had to deal with it. It must have been absolutely petrifying, you know, having to really think about get out of here. We better move, you know, better move the family and leave your assets. It must have been a nightmare for your family, and I'm so glad that you reestablished yourself in the United States. And one day, Carmel, one day, maybe, possible, when that the Islamic theology has fallen, maybe you can return back home. That must be your dream, my friend, for the future, for your aspirations. But you know, as I say, you're a journalist, so it's nice that you're covering different aspects and keeping people up to speed of exactly how this affects, you know, not just, you know, Iran and the wider, but the world, because of this Iranian it's some lot trying to create a caliphate in what some ways. But maybe worse, I don't know, Carmel, maybe your thoughts.
I'm not sure I understand your question. You're asking what the regime's desires are, or?
I think we know it's all about power. They want their nuclear weapons, don't they, so that they can blackmail and threaten the world with that technology, and everybody's trying to resist. But is that what they want? They want to totally dominate the world.
That is the long term goal of the regime. If you look at the regime's constitution and the members of parliament, the Iranian parliament, that swear allegiance to the constitution, their goal is to spread their form of radical Shiite Islam, not just to the Middle East, but to the rest of the world. Their belief is that if they can have the rest of the world follow their form of radical Shiite Islam, then this will bring their the Mahdi, which is their equivalent of the Messiah, and this will, you know, create a quote unquote paradise on earth, and they will use all means possible to achieve that.
To come through well. This is what I don't know, my friend, but it's something about he'll come from the well or a well of some sort. That's what I've heard anyway.
Correct.
Yes.
Well, now, Carmel,
I'm just going to clarify that with you, because this is what I've heard over the time. But once again, I've got to thank you for your time this evening, coming and joining myself and Dave. And it's so important that we have your voice on these shows so that we can explain. So you can explain to the world what's actually how you see things, how you perceive things, and how do we deal with Iran, because they're really difficult to sort of deal with, aren't they?
Well, the best way right now is to look look at the situation at hand with the protesters. Almost a week ago, thousands in almost every major city in Iran, smaller cities, towns, villages, the people of Iran, who are tremendously fantastic people. I have the utmost love and appreciation for them, and we must make the differentiation between the people and the regime. The people are totally different and opposed to this regime, but the people for the last week or so have begun an uprising, a mass national protest against the evils of the regime, the corruption of the regime, the lack of economic opportunities, the lack of freedom, the lack of a real voice, a lack of opportunity. Many people in the U.S. and Europe and the West forget that close to 70% of Iran's population are under the age of 35. They don't remember
yes, very
the
young,
Ayatollah.
Aren't they? Very young. That's
yeah.
what I've heard.
They have aspirations for great things.
God bless the great people of the Iranian people, because, you know, you've got to stand up against oppression, haven't you, Carmel? And that's what your great people are doing. God bless them, I would say. Go ahead,
yeah,
Carmel.
And we need, you know, in the West, we need to support them. We need to urge our elected officials to put pressure on the Iranian regime and put pressure on those governments in the UK and Europe that are appeasing the regime to speak up, to stand up and say, no, this is not right. You know, you need to allow these people to have a voice. The regime, in response to the crackdown, in response to the protests, have cracked down on the protesters, basically slaughtering them on the streets with live ammunition, beating them, arresting them. They've shut down the internet for a number of days for the entire country. Imagine a country of 80 million with zero internet access. They've brought, this is how desperate the regime is, they've brought the entire country to a standstill in order to retain this power and crush this popular uprising. And what's, you know, what's truly heartbreaking for...
But they're crumbling, aren't they? Come on, I hope you don't mind me interjecting, but isn't the economy crumbling simply because of the stress and the strains that the United States has been putting on them, you know?
Absolutely,
I mean,
absolutely. The U.S. sanctions on Iran are working, contrary to what some of these media pundits on the left and apologists for the regime say.
Yeah.
The regime is under distress. But they're ready to dig themselves into an even deeper hole by, you know, silencing the voices and shutting down the internet, which basically shuts down all other commerce in the country.
Yeah, I'm quite concerned about it, because when your regime becomes desperate, they do desperate things, don't they? Like any regime, you know that they, the way that they hit out, especially towards your people. I'm just hoping that the United States and the allies that respect the freedom of the people of Iran stand up and when it comes to give them aid, whatever aid that might be, and I'm not saying guns or anything like that, but you know what I mean, don't you, Carmel? That's what the good people need. That's how you fight an uprising. You know, you can't just do it with flesh and blood. Sometimes you need to go in with weapons against the regime. What can you do, Carmel? Otherwise, you're just going to be slaughtered. You'll be slaughtered, aren't you, the people? Go ahead.
The people of Iran are beaming back through social media their messages of, you know, anger, frustration with the regime, and also their protests, and they're showing the brutality of the regime through, you know, videos, photographs, of how the regime's thugs and apparatus are killing people, detaining people just for, you know, protesting. And the regime is basically shut down the internet to prevent that. In the last few days, they've allowed some kind of internet access, but it's very limited through, you know, very few, you know, avenues. The West and the United States can provide that internet access through satellites. I haven't seen it. I haven't heard of it. But if you go through social media, there are thousands and thousands of Iranians outside of the country and in the country asking for the U.S. to step in and provide them with that internet access that the regime has denied them.
Well, Carmel, if you don't mind.
Your voice can be heard on the radio show like we're doing now. Hopefully it will be heard, you know, and hopefully something will be done because, as I say, the people are becoming desperate and angry simply because they're doing everything they can. But you need backup, don't you? That's what the people need, backup. And I'm pointing, Mr. President Trump, I hope you're listening to us because, you know, the good people of Iran need your help. And I know you're doing the best you can. Shame that this United Kingdom couldn't do exactly the same. But unfortunately, it's a different thing. But Carmel, once again, it's a great honour and a privilege to have you. Carmel, I was going to say, before we continue, can we do another show? Can you come back now and again to let us know how things, you know, if things are changing at a later time, you know, maybe another show later down the road, if it's okay with you? Because I'd love to talk with you because you've got so much knowledge. You know exactly, you've got your finger on the pulse, and we love to hear people like you on the radio show, Carmel.
My pleasure. My pleasure to join you anytime. Be more than happy to share insights whenever you like.
That's
well, Carmel,
really
I'd like to...
I want to pass it back to Dave, Carmel. But as I say, once again, you've opened my eyes to a lot of things that I didn't quite understand, but you clarified that. Once again, thank you for your time tonight and to share with the listeners out there exactly what is going on and what can be done. And with that, I'd like to pass it back to Dave. Dave, I know you might have a couple of questions for our dear friend Carmel.
Right. Well, Carmel, I do have a couple of questions / observations involving the press here. And it's very important, this, because perception is a very large part of whether the freedom movement in Iran gets the help it needs. Now, this program is being monitored once in a while by members of the Fourth Estate in the United Kingdom, people who are not sympathetic to any freedom movement anywhere. They consider us to be thisists and thatists and thisophobes and thatophobes, even though the only thing that the English Defense League has ever asked for is equal treatment under the law for everyone, but they try and mischaracterize us. I want to take care of one thing that some of them might say right now. All right. You, as an independent journalist, have not just written for the Weekly Shopper. You have actually had, this is the first question, you've actually had articles in some significant publications. Am I correct?
Correct.
Well, like, for instance, which publications would those be?
My articles have appeared in various Southern California publications, the Los Angeles Jewish Journal, The Forward is another Jewish publication in New York. The Jerusalem Post is an Israeli newspaper. The Arutz Sheva news organization based out of Israel. The Orange County Register is a Southern California newspaper. A number of wire news services. A number of Iranian publications here in Southern California. It's the list is too long.
Understood. When you're an independent journalist,
yes, freelance. I'm not affiliated with any one organization. My objective is to reach as many people as possible, and just educate people about what's going on in Iran, and mm-hmm. how it affects Americans and Westerners.
Right. Now, the other thing I want to get to here is, again, the perception thing. This is being put out by the BBC, all right, the article that I have in front of me. It's fairly recent, and the headline on it is Iran petrol protests. That's gasoline for our American brothers and sisters. 100 leaders arrested in crackdown. Now, the perception that the BBC, and I've seen other publications do this as I was scanning around for this, have been that it's all over issues involving petrol or gasoline, gas prices, this sort of thing. It's almost as if they're painting this as being an uprising concerning one issue. Now, can you share a little bit of truth about whether or not that's correct?
That's bogus. That is completely false. Unfortunately, much of the media in Europe and the United States has been advancing the regime's talking points. The regime doesn't want to shed the correct light on this protest. They want to segregate it to labeling it as some kind of uprising because of fuel prices. That's garbage. And the reason it's garbage is if you look at the videos that are coming out from the protesters themselves on social media, they're coming out and saying, not Gaza, not Lebanon, we sacrifice our lives for Iran. We don't want this regime. We're tired of the oppression. Why are our country's wealth being spent on hegemonic wars in Lebanon and Iraq and Yemen and Syria? The people themselves are saying in plain language, this is not about fuel. This is about 40 years of oppression. This is about 40 years of humiliation and corruption, and we're sick of it. Unfortunately, the Western media, the larger media outlets, the BBC, CNN, New York Times, they are picking up the regime's talking points, and they are regurgitating
right,
it very, very sadly. And unfortunately, there aren't any Western reporters
BBC
in Iran to refute it and lay it out properly.
And these are some of the largest ones, too, Carmel. As I said, I scanned around looking for this, and it all came up. Yes, fuel prices, and you named them, CNN, The New York Times. Name the large publication. I think I even saw AP pushing this, the Associated Press. And I knew that it was bogus, but As you were speaking, Carmel, I had my mic muted, and I was going, yes, beautiful, because our listeners needed to hear the fact that this is completely bogus from someone who knows what he is talking about. And obviously, I agree with Jeff about having you back at some point, maybe early next year, who knows, because you also are versed in the Iranian Sharia law, and that plugs into the entire Shiite sect of Islam, which affects much of the Middle East, and as we know, is pushing tentacles out into places like Africa and South America and places of that nature. And it really needed to be said that whatever folks listening to this whatever you're hearing from the fake stream media, BBC, Sky News over in the UK, in the States, CNN, MSNBC, all of those people, is a complete farce and is completely wrong. And Carmel, I know you have to go in a few minutes. Are there some things that you'd like to say? First of all, how can people, if you have a website or something of that nature that people could get hold of you at, how can people get hold of you? And maybe some final statements from you.
I do not have a website, but I am available on Facebook and Twitter at Carmel Melamed, K-A-R-M-E-L-M-E-L-A-M-E-D, my first and last name. So people can reach me and follow my commentary or any pieces that I write on social media. And, of course, you know, your program. Be more than happy to join you guys and shed light on, you know, what's going on with the regime and, unfortunately, how Western governments and also news agencies are appeasing this regime instead of fighting back against it and exposing its evil. If I may, and I don't want to take away from Ronald Reagan's statement where he called the Soviet Union an evil empire that we need to fight back against. Well, my friends, I think in this century, the new evil empire is the Iranian regime. I'm not comparing it with, you know, the Soviet regime by no means, but the level of evil is comparable. And we need to look at Iran as a serious threat to civilization. And, you know, look at the facts instead of, you know, hearing the talking heads.
You're absolutely right. Go ahead, Jeff.
Just jump in for a second to say, well said, Carmel, and that is with what we talk about. This is not like normal radio shows. We don't take, you know, the political correct way about things. We tell the truth. That's why people like yourself, Carmel, who come onto this radio show for people to listen to the truth, get the truth. That's why I would love to have you back on a little bit later on, because you are an awesome gentleman to speak about the things that we talk about week in, week out, and to have someone with the expertise as yourself, which where Sharia law is concerned, is that it would be wonderful to have you join us now and again, Carmel. Thank you.
It would be an honor and a pleasure. Thank you.
Well, Carmel,
no, thank you.
I want to thank
Dave,
you.
Sorry about that. I just want to just say that.
No, carry on, Dave.
Thank you, Carmel.
Jeff's the host. Jeff's the host of the show, and you know, he and I both think that this has been a tremendous appearance on your part, and we want to thank you for spending part of your family time today to be with us. Both Jeff and I are family-oriented. Jeff is not just a father and a grandfather. He's a great-grandfather. And let's see, what time is it? It's 16:29 here. He might be a great-grandfather, you know, a few more times over before the show. So he's got a big family, Carmel. But thank you again, sir. My pleasure.
Anytime.
God bless you, sir, and thank you for calling. And we will talk again. Thanks for being on our show.
God bless.
We will. Thank you, Carmel.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye, my friend.
Bye.
Take care, Jeff, what do you think, man?
Absolutely awesome. What a great... it was just nice to get the facts out there, exactly what's going on, and to hear Carmel with other things, the other aspects of what's going on inside Iran. That's what I'm saying. It'd be nice to have him join us in the not-too-distant future just to keep us up to speed on how things are unfolding, because it's really, really important. And it's... He made a really important statement about, I think it was Ronald Reagan saying the biggest threat was the Russian Empire. And what Carmel said It's not the Russian Empire, but the Iranian Empire. And I would, do you know what, Dave? I would go along with what Carmel said there. That was amazing. Amazing.
It sure was, Jeff. Yeah, I mean, as I say, I've had knowledge of this guy, and you know, he really did show himself as a man who knows what he's talking about, and I know that it's why I asked him what publications he had written for, because you know that some of the lefties in the press are gonna say, oh, you know, they just brought some guy on. And no, he's not just some guy. He's a man who understands what he's talking about when he talks about the Iranian regime. All right, he's well versed in it, and he is someone that people should listen to. And we will have him back. What he fascinated me when we were talking about. When we were talking about the Sharia law and the its application to Jewish people and to Christian people,
yeah,
and things of that nature, and we will want to have a talk with him about that, because that's very important. And
what I wanted to ask Carmel was if the regime falls, if the Iranian regime
mm-hmm.
falls and the people take back control, would he return? That's what I wanted him to ask. Now, I don't know whether he would want to go back I suppose he would. It's a love. It's where he was born, wasn't it? It's where his family roots have come from. So that's something I wanted to. But as I say, I knew we didn't have much time. I didn't want to expand too much, Dave, you know.
Right.
A wonderful call. I've got to thank you, Dave, for inviting Carmel. And if you, I think we're going to have some great conversations with Mr. Melamed. Absolutely wonderful,
yeah,
to hear that gentleman speaking about the things. And what made me feel sad was to know that he lost one of his family, or his father lost a family member, and he had to identify after they shot his father's probably brother or cousin, whatever it was. And he was only a young man when he was shot, taken off the streets and shot, because he was had a Jewish business or something. I think that's what Carmel said. It mortifies me that is how they treat people. Okay? That's disgusting.
Well, yes, that is again, you're talking about the Mohammedan mindset. You know, they go after the Saturday people as well as the Sunday people. We're the Sunday people, the Christians, and the Jewish people are the Saturday people. That's a way to look at it. And that was this man's one crime, was that he was prosperous and he was Jewish, and he was in Iran soon after the revolution, and that was his one crime. And but again, it does my heart.
You could never forget that you lost a family member, whether he was an uncle, a cousin, but you mm-hmm. lost someone who was murdered by that regime. Murdered, not just, but actually murdered because of being Jewish. Ladies and gentlemen,
mm-hmm.
that's what I'm saying. You talk about anti-Semitism. They hate Jewish people with all their being, their fibre. It makes me feel sick. Dave, I've got to take a break. I've just realised I've gone over my time, all my life.
Oh, shoot. Yeah, you know what? You have, man. And I apologize. I normally watch that for you.
That's okay,
but I didn't
buddy.
This time.
I mean, I'm going to cut a call short.
Yeah.
I was listening to a great gentleman like
absolutely.
Mr. Malamed. He was absolutely awesome too. But, Dave, if you could carry on a minute, mate, I'm just be right back. I'll be back
okay,
in two
cool,
shakes
yeah.
of an axe, whatever.
All right, man. All right. Well, you know what I'll do while you're gone? We'll go ahead and play the SHR Media promos here. This will take about 3.5 minutes. Guys, you're listening to a very special English Defense League radio show, one that will be aired on Christmas Day at the SHR Media, at the Unpleasant Blind Guy page on Spreaker.com, which runs through SHR Media. And we are also associated, on this program with SHR Media, which has a number of really good shows out there and some great hosts from the United States. And we're going to play you some promos from them. Check these shows out. As you just heard Carmel say, all right, these organizations like the BBC and Sky News and CNN and all these other people are just out there pushing out lefty talking points and stuff that the tyrants want them to say. But these are some shows featuring some real people that are covering some real issues and telling the truth, just like we try to do right here on the English Defense League radio show. And we're going to play those promos right now, and we'll be back afterwards.
Conservative media done right. You're listening to the SHR Media Network.
Hey, this is Michael Wright.
And I'm Shannon Wright.
Join us for The Right Way with Shannon and Mike, Monday through Thursday from 7 to 9 a.m. right here on SHR Media.
Why are they joining us?
For fun things like sports, politics.
Oh, maybe some news and entertainment?
And all kinds of other things.
Money and recipes and events, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, so join us Monday through Thursday, 7 to 9 a.m. here on SHRmedia.com.
From a public locker inside a dilapidated Long Island rail station comes a show designed to piss off liberals using truth, facts, and ridicule. The Lid Radio Show, featuring the conservative voice from the People's Republic of New York. The Lid himself, Jeff Dunnett. Tune in every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the SHR Media Network. Go to shrmedia.com. At Lid Radio, we fight for the truth, justice, and a good kosher T-bone. If you don't listen, Hillary Clinton might sneak into your bedroom in her house coat late at night and blame you for her election loss. It's the Lid Radio Show with Jeff Dunnett.
It's your business diva here, Melanie Collette. I am inviting you to a front row seat as I discuss some of the most intriguing details of wealth and finance with today's movers and shakers in the world of business. Listen in and discover financial truth on a global, domestic, and household scale. Uncover topics that will impact your wallet today and in the future. Money Talk with Melanie airs Monday through Friday, 5 p.m. East, 2 p.m. West, right here on SHR Media and High Plains Pundit Talk Radio. You can't afford to miss it.
The new show on the SHR Media Network, Sackheads Against Tyranny. On shrmedia.com, go there quick like a bunny, 11 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Pacific, every Wednesday, live and direct on the SHR Media Network, shrmedia.com. Be there.
Broadcasting behind enemy lines in occupied California, a mere 2 miles from the state capital, the Bloviating Zeppelin's Berserk Bobcat Saloon Radio Show can be heard every Tuesday and Thursday night at 8 p.m. Pacific and 11 p.m. Eastern, only on the SHR Media Network. Go to shrmedia.com to listen. You can also watch on the SHR Media Facebook page and the SHR Media YouTube channel. No goldfish were abused in the making of this ad.
Conservative media done right. You're listening to the SHR Media Network.
And welcome back to the English Defense League Radio Show with your host, Jeff Spider Mitchell. You know, Jeff, one of the things that I really love, I love two things about the SHR Media promos. First, I love the fact that they share out information on some great shows for our listeners. And second, it gives me a chance to go to the bathroom. So, and folks, let me tell you, that's real important when you're sitting down for 90 minutes and you can't move until there's something else going on. So, all right. Well, Jeff, brother, we still have places to go, man. We still have places to go. I want to read you this from here, a bit of it. Anyway, this one here came out on the 23rd, okay, which is yesterday, obviously, and
yesterday,
it
right?
comes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was yesterday. Sure was, yeah. And this has come from a few places, all right. This comes from the Associated Press. Now, we've talked about Iran and talked about Bolivia, and now we're going to go to Hong Kong, which, as you guys know, it has really been stirring with freedom movements there against the tyranny of the communist Chinese regime. Well,
now that's what you call serious oppression going on, isn't it? Like serious oppression.
Oh yeah. Serious oppression. And if you look in our show slides, you'll see pictures of people who have had to take some extreme measures just to protect themselves. The headline here is Hong Kong Families Protest Police Use of Tear Gas. Now, people say, tear gas, that's no big deal. But that's a little bit more to this story, guys. And it's a little bit more that you're going to want to hear, okay? Now, we start here. Here we go. In Hong Kong, from the AP, chanting no more tear gas, dozens of Hong Kong families with young children marched Saturday to oppose the government's handling of pro-democracy protests on the eve of keenly contested local elections. Now, that one's going to be very interesting, guys, just to see how those elections turn out. Are they going to be mishandled and rigged by the communist Chinese, or how they're going to turn out? But I digress. So let's get back to the story. Riot police have repeatedly fired more than, get this guys, 9,000 rounds of tear gas since protests began, roiling the Chinese. Just a moment, guys. I'm sorry. This is not written well. Okay, let me try that again. All right. Riot police have repeatedly fired more than 9,000 rounds of tear gas since protests began against the Chinese. There you go. Since protests began roiling the Chinese territory in June, often in crowded areas and also near schools. With police now buying, and this is the important part here, guys, with the police now buying canisters from China, there are rising fears that the tear gas could release toxic chemicals, including cancer-causing dioxin. Remember that big stink about dioxin back in the 1980s, everybody? A local journalist covering the protests reportedly said he had been diagnosed with a skin condition linked to exposure to toxins, including dioxin. Now, let's go down here a little bit, guys. Here we go. The government this week said there was no evidence of any health or environmental risks and has refused to reveal the chemicals in the tear gas, citing operational concerns. Now, Jeff, I don't know about you, but that sounds pretty sketchy to me right there. Okay? And I continue. Does the government have something to hide? With police firing tear gas wantonly, how do we protect ourselves and clean up properly after the exposure? Emily Koo, age 33, said as she marched with her 5-year-old daughter in a Kowloon suburb. More worrying is the unknown long-term impact on children's health, she said. Another marcher, Michelle Lamb, said she and her six-year-old daughter, who live in an area that has been a frequent protest site, have suffered worsening sinus symptoms in recent weeks due to tear gas. Start firing 9,000 rounds of that stuff, it's going to get in the air. Lamb said she will vote early Sunday in the district council elections and hopes a win by the pro-democracy camp will make clear that Hong Kong people are united behind the movement to protect the city's freedoms. Very important. Now, the government should respond to the people's demands and not use tear gas and other hard tactics to suppress our voice, she said, before the march ended peacefully. And that's something that really, guys, I want to emphasize, peacefully, because you know how the lefty press is going to treat this. Sunday's polls have emerged as a pivotal bellwether on public support for the increasingly violent protests, you see they're increasingly violent, which have disrupted life in the financial hub for months. And this sounds very familiar, Jeff, to some of the things that have been written about EDL demonstrations. There was a rare repose. There was a rare repose in violence this week as protesters, anxious to validate their cause through the ballot box, hit the pause button to ensure the polls won't be postponed. We need to show the world that our cause is legitimate. I don't believe that Beijing will not respond to the Hong Kong people's voice, black-clad and masked student Alex Wong said during the anti-tear gas march. And that online messages have urged protesters not to wear black or face masks during voting in case they are targeted by police. For the first time, all 452 seats in 18 district councils, currently dominated by pro-establishment parties, are being contested. So it's a big deal, guys. Hong Kong Chief Secretary Matthew Cheng said Saturday that the vote by nearly 60% of the city's population, now this is about a turnout for you, is a real democratic exercise, and that a strong police presence at polling stations will ensure that it proceeds smoothly, unless they can intimidate a few people to vote the way they want. All right, there's a little bit more of this, guys. Cheng brushed off comments by President Donald Trump that he was the reason why China didn't crush the Hong Kong protests. Trump said Friday he had asked Chinese President Xi Jinping not to send in the military because it would complicate U.S.-China trade talks. There's more of that economic pressure there, Jeff, that we were talking about with Carmel. I'll continue. Trump also refused to commit to signing bipartisan legislation supporting Hong Kong's pro-democracy activists after Beijing warned it would retaliate, which I wish the president had not done that, but hey, there you are. To continue, we have the confidence, determination, and ability to resolve the crisis to find a way out of this storm, Cheng said. He also reiterated that police will deal humanely with a small group of protesters who refused to leave Polytechnic University, which has been ringed by police for days. It's become a center for the protesters. Mediators, including teachers, social workers, and lawyers, scoured the campus Saturday to find and persuade protesters to leave. Hygiene has deteriorated, with a strong stench from rotten food and trash littering the campus grounds. One more bit here. The campus occupation by protesters followed fiery clashes with police in the latest bout in the unrest. Protesters are demanding direct elections for Hong Kong's leader and legislators, and an investigation into alleged police brutality. There you are, Jeff. That's what's going on in Hong Kong. Your views?
Yeah, no, it's. I think if it wasn't that your president hadn't, he knows exactly what's going on. At the same time, he's trying to be diplomatic and to put pressure on under the Chinese command, you know, Jinping, whatever his name is. I can never pronounce his name, but I think maybe this is another way that the violence could be a lot worse if it wasn't for the for your president actually talking about it. Because if he talks about it, he knows he's interested in exactly what's going on. So, and you know that that under those sort of lines and that if he says anything, that's the word of the, you know, the president of the United States. So that carries a lot of weight. And it doesn't matter how powerful you are in China, whatever, that means a lot. So it's saying, take your foot off the pedal. Do not accelerate your violence against the people. Basically, that's what he's saying. You know, otherwise, them deals are going to, you know, the tariffs are going to get really hard, you know. You think the economy's getting bad? You know, we can tighten it up a bit. That's diplomatic tool. But I do feel for the people. I just see that thing. Doug. Yeah, anyway, we got up to, maybe we'll catch up with some of these things Sunday. As I say, ladies and gentlemen, we will be taking, it's going to be a Thanksgiving to this Thursday.
Yeah, baby.
And Dave will be out there chilling, eating his turkey, doing his thing. So, Dave, your final thoughts ahead, and wish you all of my American friends, God bless you. Have a great Thanksgiving, and good on you all. God bless you all. Come on, Dave. Your final thoughts.
Well, God bless you. Well, God bless you, Jeff. Yeah, Thanksgiving's coming. I'm going to get my eat on, you know, and be thankful for everyone. Guys, the show that we're going to have on our regular time, 8:30 p.m. in the UK, 3:30 p.m. Eastern in the United States, on Thursday, is going to be a show highlighting something that we're all thankful for, which is our military veterans. So we're going to rerun our program that we did, marking Remembrance Day and Veterans Day. I can't think of many more things that I'm thankful for, aside from my family and friends and people like Jeff. I have to say, Jeff, really quickly on the Chinese thing. I have to say really quickly on the Chinese thing. I almost wish that their previous president Hu, had when he visited the United States, had been given an honorary doctorate by some university, because then we could have called him Dr. Hu. But anyway,
boom boom.
Everybody, please check out
what you like.
Everybody, please check out the Unpleasant Black Guy page.
Good night.
Yeah. Everybody, please check out the Unpleasant Black Guy page at Spreaker.com. And my show times are 1 p.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday, and that's 6 p.m. in the UK, and midnight Saturday Eastern, and that's 5 a.m. in the UK on a Saturday. And I also appear on the Western Free Radio Network and at the SHR Media YouTube page. And I'd just like to say to the foot soldiers, angels, to all of the people involved in the freedom movements around the world, Hong Kong, Venezuela, Iran, France, all of these places. God be with you. Be prosperous. Be blessed. And no surrender ever. We are with you. Back to you, brother.
Amen, Dave. Everything you said there, and that's including Bognor Regis. Yes, Bognor Regis. Yeah, we give thank and praise to everybody who's standing up and fighting against the injustice, the oppression, suppression, whatever you want to call it. But you're doing a fantastic job, and we salute you all. Keep strong, keep firm, and as I say, no surrender. Onward and forward. With that, we'll be back again Sunday with another show. But once again, and of course, the fine gentleman we had on tonight, Carmel Melamed, we hopefully we'll have him on in the future, because he's a great...
Many thanks, Carmel.
He's going to be a great guest for future talk show. So with that, from myself, from Dave, from the team, from us all, happy Thanksgiving, and we'll see you Sunday. No surrender. No surrender ever. And okay, guys, wait for it. Ugh, they're pushing me, Dave. They're pushing me again. Okay, go for it. We're going underground, Dave, before they knock me off my chair. Here we go.
Oh,
People might say that I should strive for more. I'm so happy I can't see that fine things happening here today. A show of strength with your five brigade. I'm so happy and you're so fine. You want more money, of course, I don't mind. My nuclear tanks are far from its prime. Then the public gets what the public wants. Pleasure as I hate me, I've done enough already on my fate. People might need some tension to relax me. I'm too busy dodging between the facts. Here's what you get. You made your bed, you better lie in it. You choose your leader to place your trust. And the lies will shut down and their promises run. You'll be killing machines with paper rockets and guns. And the public wants what the public gets. But I don't give up.
Well, we come to the end of the show with about 15 seconds left. That was good timing. She just told me I've got 10 seconds. Okay, we'll see you again Sunday. Take care, stay safe. And, yep, we'll see you Sunday. Happy Thanksgiving. God bless you. This is the English Defence League radio show signing off for tonight, but we'll be back again this Sunday. And once again, happy Thanksgiving to all of our American friends. God bless you all, brothers and sisters. I just got to do something there. Okay. See you later, guys. Bye-bye.